Hey, you're listening to the Casper Faith Podcast, where you can catch up on and re-listen to encouraging messages shared by the staff here at the church. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope these words inspire you, challenge you, and expose you to God's love in a meaningful way. Enjoy the message.
This morning, you can turn to Numbers chapter 13 and Philippians chapter 4. This time of year is candidating time. How many enjoy this time of year? I do, but not that part of it. You know, one of the things that I think I dislike about it is whenever you turn on the television, even the news or a show, whatever, there's always some kind of political ad. And there's so many of them, and the same one over and over, but also the negativity of them. Just the bad vibe, and it gets so discouraging. One candidate extolling his virtues, the other, you know, denigrating the virtues of their opponent. And so it's this time where you hear these good reports, these bad reports, it goes back and forth. And whether we realize it or not, spiritually speaking, we are bombarded with good reports and bad reports in our own life each and every day. And that's what I want to talk to you about, is a good report. A good report. And we read about this in the book of Numbers. The story, the setting is the nation of Israel, and they are getting ready to enter into the promised land, the land that God said, this is yours. Now, they have been slaves in Egypt for over 400 years. They've been slaves, so that's all they have known. And what God does is God brings them out through a series of miracles. He issues plagues upon the gods of Egypt. There's 10 plagues, and in each situation, God shows that he is more powerful than the gods of Egypt. Finally, the last plague, the plague of the firstborn, which when Pharaoh's son died, the Pharaoh was seen as God. When his son died, Pharaoh says, okay, you can go, so they're released. And as they leave the land of Egypt, Pharaoh has a change of heart, and he says, I'm going after them buggers. And so they take off after him, and Moses, with about 2 to 3 million people at least, they say, it could have been even several million more, but there's at least 2 to 3 million, they're at the Red Sea, and they hear this noise behind them, and it's Pharaoh and the army of Egypt, and they're trapped. They're hemmed in. They are in deep weeds unless God comes through. And God does come through. He opens up the Red Sea. And so the 2-3 million plus people of the nation of Israel, they walk through safely to the other side. Pharaoh sees the opening, and he says, let's go after them. And when every Egyptian soldier is in the Red Sea, God closes it up and destroys the entire army in one shot. Israel never had to lift a sword, never had to throw a spear, never had to get a slingshot like little David and chuck a rock. God did it for them. And so here's the thing. They have no more fear of any repercussions from their former enslavers. They don't have to worry about that. God has truly set them free, and they don't have to worry about them coming and attacking them later. You realize these guys, all they've ever done is they've done construction and they've raised animals. They're not trained soldiers. In battle, they're probably not going to do well. God has now taken their biggest threat out of the way. And as there was no Walmart in the desert. There was no Visa card. We're like, okay, I'm going to charge this so I can get food. No, God supernaturally gives them food and water in the middle of the desert. And now they're on the edge of the promised land, this land that God said, I'm giving you. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. That is the setting in Numbers chapter 13. We're going to pick it up in verse 18, a little bit earlier than our text. And God says, I want you to go, God tells Moses, I want you to send spies in, check out the land, see what it's like. And one from every tribe, there's 12 tribes, take one leader from every tribe and send them in. So in verse 18, see what the land is like, whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified. You have to realize many times back in those days, the cities had walls built around them that were several feet high, 20, 30, 40, 50 feet high, and that was for protection so they couldn't be attacked. And he says, are they unwalled or are they fortified with walls? How is the soil? Is it fertile or good? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. So the 12 spies, they go in, they check things over, and they travel. We've got a map up here. They enter the south part into the wilderness where it says Kadesh Barnea down in the bottom, and they go up through the entire land, what is now modern-day Israel, up to near Dan, Beth Rehob, and they check it out. You can see the Sea of Galilee kind of up there underneath, near the top. There's a round body of water, and the Jordan River flows down to the Dead Sea. They make this entire route in 40 days. It's a 400-mile round trip, about 200 miles up, 200 miles back. They're going at least, 10 miles a day. And here's the thing. It's not nice, flat walking. It's not on paved roads. They're going up and down mountains, up and down hills, down in valleys, fording streams. It's a pretty strenuous thing, and they don't want to be out in the open because they're spies. This is to be covert. And so they are spying out the land for 40 days, and they come back, and they give a report. Actually, they give two reports. By the way, this land, it was so fertile. When you look at verse 23, they brought back some of the fruit. They brought back a cluster of grapes. That cluster was so large, it took two grown men to carry a pole, and they tied the cluster onto the pole, and they carried this cluster of grapes. Can you imagine a cluster that big? That was how fertile the land was. And so there's two reports that go out. I'm going to pick it up in verse 30. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." That's the good report. That's the report God had told them. Hey, I'm giving you the land. Caleb says, hey, let's go take it. But, verse 31, the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report. Say bad report. They spread a bad report about the land that they explored. Caleb and Joshua gave a good report. We can take this land. This is God's destiny for us. This is the lion that he wants us to chase. This is the dream. But the 10 other spies gave a bad report. The enemy's stronger than us. We can't do this. It doesn't matter what God says. We are not able. We're going to be devoured. There is going to be nothing left. These people, they're like giants. We are like grasshoppers. We're going to get squashed like a bug because that's what we are in their eyes. In your notes this morning, and your notes today are on an insert, if you would please take the insert out of your bulletin today. And we're going to give you a couple of definitions. First, the definition of a good report. A good report sees life through the lens of faith. It sees life through the lens of faith. It sees it from God's perspective. How does God see you? What does God say about himself? What does God say about your life? What does God say about our trials, our difficulties, our circumstances, our situations? That's the good report. What does God say? Now, Joshua and Caleb were the two spies with the good report. And the good report, it leads to legacy. We all know the names of Joshua and Caleb, the two spies who went in. And they had a legacy because they have this good report. And by the way, I'll just let you know, Israel, they believed the bad report. They didn't go in. They had to wait for 40 years. Out of the 3 million people that were over the age of 20, only Joshua and Caleb went in. They're the only two because they had a good report. And it led to a legacy where they got to chase the lion. They got to chase the dream that God gave them. They believe that God defies the odds. They believe that our God is bigger than the giants. And so they have a good report, and they get to go into the promised land with their children. And they get to see their grandkids be born in it, and their great-grandkids. It led to a legacy, the good report. Now, the bad report, on the other hand, it sees life through the lens of flesh, from man's perspective. What does man say this is? Man, really, this report, it excludes or it limits God. God's not involved, or God is minimized. He can't do a whole lot. It's basically what we can do, or what someone can do to us, but it's a purely fleshly perspective of life. And the bad report leads to lunacy and being lost. When I say lunacy, I was looking for something that rhymed with legacy, lunacy. Here it is. It was crazy for Israel to not enter the promised land. When you think about it, they have just seen their God defeat the 10 gods of Egypt. You think about that. They've just seen that take place. And who were their gods? Their gods were in the animal kingdom. There was frogs and insects, you know, lice and flies and this. Their God was the river, and God turns the river to blood. Their God was weather, and it hailed. God took control of weather. God even had the sun go black. I mean, Israel's God could do anything. They have just had food and drink for the entire nation, 3+ million people, for absolutely free. Can you imagine providing food and drink for all of Casper, Bar None, Mills, and Evansville for free? I mean, how much is that going to take? How much food? How much money? But they've seen that multiplied for them, and now they say, we can't do this. They're totally forgetting about God, and it was crazy for them not to enter the promised land. And they ended up being lost. They ended up being lost. What are the names of the 10 spies that gave the bad report? Can you name one? No idea. We'd have to make them up. Jedediah, Hopabiah, you know, Zeke. I don't know. We don't know who they are. And that's the thing. When you don't let God be the author of your life, like we talked about last week, when you don't let God write a beautiful story, when you say, no, I've got to be the author, I've got to be the one in charge, and I look through the eyes of the flesh and say, it's all about me, I can't put my trust in God, you lose the legacy, you end up being lost, and you have no purpose and meaning in life for the next 40 years. Those 10 spies and the millions of people of Israel traveled in the desert and died out one by one by one. Just wasted the opportunity that God had given them. And it all came down to two reports. A good report and a bad report. And today, your legacy, the destiny that God has for you, the dreams that he has for your life, the dreams he has for us as a church, depend on which report we're going to believe. Are we going to believe God's report, the report of faith, or are we going to believe man's report of the flesh? The Apostle Paul understood how important this was. We're going to apply this here as we go through the remainder of the message today. But Paul understood the importance of the report that you're believing. And he wrote about it to the Philippians. Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. He says, finally, brothers, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things or think on these things. The things which you've learned and received and heard and saw in me do, and the God of peace will be with you. Paul notes how important it is for us to think about the good report, to think about good things that are true, things that promote justice, that promote integrity and purity, things that promote virtue, things that will inspire you to praise God, to attempt to do noteworthy, praiseworthy things for God. Notice that the bad report, think about it, man's perspective, when man just lives according to himself and excludes God, man's report, man's viewpoint rarely promotes true justice. It rarely promotes integrity and purity. It rarely promotes things that are worthy of giving God praise. Almost it's to the contrary. It's things that would go against God. Many times they're not true. Many times they're not right. They're not noble. When you live life from a vantage point that is excluding God from your perspective, it ends up not well. You look at communistic societies where they said God doesn't exist. Are they flourishing today? No, they're crumbling all around us. Why? Because they've excluded God. When America was started, God was part of the fabric of our nation. And that's why it's so important for us as a nation to seek after God, because sin is a reproach to any nation, but righteousness exalts a nation. As we go after God, God exalts us. But if we go after sin, it will be our demise. And you can search history. You can look at history. When nations began to just go into the way of the flesh, to go whatever they wanted to do and not follow God's ways, those nations diminished. Those nations perished. Those world empires. You read about those world empires, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, Rome, they all crumbled. And they crumbled from within, not so much without. It was the inner decay that took place. And if we want to be a people that say, I want God to do great things in my life, great things in my family, great things in our nation, then we need to be a people that are chasing after God. But it all comes about, what report are we going to focus on? God's perspective or man's perspective? I want to share with you four observations about our thoughts, because Paul says, hey, think on these things, the good report. I want to share with you four observations about our thoughts, why your thoughts are so vitally important, what you think about. The first one is that our thoughts are very powerful. Our thoughts are very powerful. The most powerful force in the world is not a person. It's not a company. It's not a machine, it's not a government, but the most powerful force is a thought. I want you to think about that. Nazism first started out as a thought. Communism started as a thought. Jihad started as a thought. It is the thought. And on the flip side, the great inventions, humanitarian efforts and endeavors, you know, medical breakthroughs that promote health, all of them started as a thought. Thoughts are the most powerful things in the world. And so what we think, we have to realize our thoughts are powerful, and they either can create a destiny or destroy a destiny. And it all begins with your thoughts. It begins with my thoughts. Our thoughts are the most powerful force on the planet. Your thoughts can be creative and constructive, or they can be diminishing and destructive. Our thoughts are so powerful. The Israelites, their thoughts, the bad report, we can't do this, caused them to lose 40 years and millions of people. Can you imagine that? Just one thought, one report, we can't do it, sent a nation down a dark trail. That's the power of thought. We do not want to exclude God and what he says about us, our life, from our thoughts. Proverbs 23, verse 7 says, As a person thinks in his heart, so is he. As a person thinks in his heart, so is he. That's why we need to be thinking a good report. You think about it. A person robs a bank. Why? Because they think about robbing a bank. If you never thought about robbing a bank, if you never thought, okay, where are the weaknesses in security? When is the best time? How do I cut the alarm code? How do I get the, if you're not thinking about robbing a bank, you're never going to rob a bank. Everything in your life starts with the thought. Your thoughts are so, so powerful. They determine the direction of your life. Number two, the second observation about our thoughts is we determine what our thoughts will be. Nobody goes into your mind, nobody comes into your ear and opens the door of your mind and says, okay, Craig, you've got to think this way. Gene, you've got to think that. Nancy, Linda, you got to think like, no, nobody determines our thoughts. No one is that powerful. You and I determine what we're going to think about, what's going to be on our mind, what's going to resonate and dwell there. You determine what your thoughts are. I remember when I was in college, I went through a period of insomnia. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't get to bed. And I would go to bed at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I would lay there. It'd be 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, and finally I would go to sleep. And it was piling up several weeks. I don't know how many weeks, 3-4 weeks, and I was getting very low. I had 7:30 class almost every day. I was trying to get naps in the afternoon. I was just dragging. I says, God, you've got to do something. God, show me what to do. And God said, Craig, I want you to read Psalm 23, and I want you to meditate on it and focus on it at bedtime. When you lay down, because what I was doing is I was thinking about this term paper and that term paper and this project and that project, and I got to do this, and I've got a quiz coming up, this, and I was thinking about all the stuff I had to do, and my mind was so busy it wouldn't shut down, and even when I tried not to, it was there. And God said, I want you to meditate on Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He leads me beside the waters. He makes me lie down in green pastures. And I felt God just say, I want you to visualize this psalm and me being your shepherd. And so I saw this beautiful grassy meadow with some nice wildflowers, some trees dotting the distance, beautiful blue sky, and clouds, and I put a tree up and a stream, just a gentle running stream, and Jesus is sitting there, and I'm just sitting next to Jesus, and we're just hanging out, and I just begin to meditate and think about, Jesus is my shepherd. I don't want, I don't have to fear, though I walk to the valley of the shadow of term papers. You know, I will not, I didn't allow myself to think about those other things. And I just thought about, God's my peace. God's my source. Jesus is providing me. And I'm just hanging out with Jesus. We're just sitting underneath the tree, listening to the stream. You know, we've got a fishing line just thrown in there. And I just thought about Jesus being my shepherd. Everything's going to be okay. And I started to meditate on that. And over time, it helped. I was able to go to bed, 3 o'clock, yeah! 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, midnight. It got to the place where 20, 40 minutes was pretty regular, sometimes sooner. And ever since then, I have never had a problem with insomnia going to sleep because God taught me that I determine what my thoughts are. And God is your shepherd. You shall not want. He'll make you lie down in green pastures and he'll lead you beside still waters. He will restore your soul. He'll lead you into paths of righteousness, of his ways, of what he wants you to do, and you don't have to worry about it. And you can walk through the valley of the shadow of death and fear no evil because God is with you. And he prepares a table before you, even in the midst of your enemies, the midst of your problems. Surely goodness and mercy follow you all the days of your life, and you will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Friends, it's a beautiful promise. If you struggle with insomnia, try meditating on Psalm 23, or let God give you a word. But here's the thing, you are the one who determines what you think about. And that will determine the powerful force working in your life. Observation Number three, our thoughts are strongly influenced by what we see and hear. Our thoughts are strongly influenced by what we see and by what we hear. And that's why it's crucial what we watch and who we listen to. It's vitally important the crowd we hang out with, the people that we let text us, our friends on Facebook, the people that you date, for those of you who are single and dating. Students, in a few weeks, you're going back to school. And you know there are some people there that have a bad report. A people, their lens of life is man's perspective. It's a fleshly perspective. God's not involved. And there are some people, you know who they are, that when you go back to school, it's like, you know what? I need to separate myself from these people of a bad report, and I need to associate with these people of a good report. People that see life, students, boys and girls, that see life through the lens of God, that have a lens of faith. And maybe there are some people that you work with, that you hang out with, you go do things with, and they are tearing you down. Now, here's the thing. I am not advocating that we completely isolate ourselves from the world and we go hole ourselves up in a wall and, you know, just sing kumbaya and wait till Jesus comes. Because Jesus was known as a friend of sinners. So we need to be in the world, but we should not be of the world. But here's the thing. Jesus, his closest friends, the 12, he went with them to the sinners and was with them. He never went alone. He was not segregated. He had his band of merry men like Robin Hood, and he went into the fray with them, and they were salt and light together. And that's what you need. You need people that are armor bearers that will strengthen you, that will help you, that will build you up for your close relationships as you engage those that don't know Christ. So your friendships, because you see, what they speak into your life, what you hear them say, what you see them do, influence your thoughts. That's how thoughts are born, through what we see and what we do. Adam and Eve in the garden, you take a look at them. The serpent said to Eve, "See that the tree is good to eat." And she looks and she saw, and it was good. It's almost like she'd never really looked before, but when she looked now and she saw it, that's what caused it. And Satan said, "See," it was what she heard, what she saw that started getting her thinking about the tree, and she lost her legacy. And she brought death into her life and into 7 billion people, including you and me. You talk about the power of thought. The people you hang out with, the voices you listen to, not just your friends, but the media, the movies you watch, the music you listen to, the magazines and the books you read, the things you read on Facebook, the internet searches you go on, all of that are voices that speak to you either a good report or a bad report. And you need to be discerning and allow the good report into your mind and to reject the bad report. Paul said, think on these things, whatever is true, noble, honest, worthy of praise, of a good report, meditate on it, think on it, fill your mind, saturate your thoughts with it, because it will determine your destiny. It's interesting, in Deuteronomy 11:18, God said, you should take my words, put them in your heart, your soul, and he says, bind them as a sign on your hand and as on frontlets between your eyes. In other words, write them and put them on your body. God said, I want you to keep my word in a visible place, a reminder, so you can see it, because what you think about is what will influence you and what will become. And there's some of us, we need to do that. You need to post scripture wherever you go often. Maybe it's the mirror. Maybe it's the refrigerator. Maybe it's the steering wheel. Maybe it is the remote. Maybe it's your computer screen. Whatever. Maybe it's your smartphone. You need your screensaver to come up with the Bible verse that every time it pops up, you see it. But we need to be putting God's word on our hands and on our minds. We need to be meditating and thinking upon it. That's why it's so important for you and I to be people of the Word. We're spending time reading God's Word, filling our minds, because that will influence our thoughts. That's why it's so important that we're taking time and praying and spending time with Jesus, that we're letting Him love us and we're communicating with Him and receiving from Him, because we need to hear what the Holy Spirit is saying to us. And there's so many of us, we struggle with our thought life because our prayer life, our word life, our spiritual life is so minimal. We give God 5-10 minutes a day, but we hear the voice of the world for about 15 hours a day. What voice do you think is going to permeate our thoughts and guide us? So it's vitally important that we're filling our mind, what we see and hear, with the right thoughts. Look at your friends. Look at what you're listening to, what you're watching, and make wise choices. Some of you, maybe you need to get out of relationships that are tearing you down. Some of you maybe need to look for a different job because it's not a healthy place. Now, I'm not saying quit your job without having one, okay? But you need to start prayerfully and saying, God, either change this, change the people, change what's going on, or change me. You need to know what God is speaking to you about your circumstance and your situation. There is a fourth observation, the fourth and final observation, is that our thoughts are the seeds of our actions. Our thoughts are the seeds of our actions. And so your thoughts, they can plant weeds and thistles and thorns in your life that bring pain, discomfort, and barrenness. Or your thoughts can plant gorgeous flowers, nutritious vegetables, luscious fruits, and majestic shade trees spiritually that beautify your life, that give comfort, strength, and joy. Your mind is a seedbed that can either grow life or produce death in your life. And the thing is, you get to choose. You determine what report am I going to listen to. You see, what you believe, what report you believe, will affect your life. And the report that you speak will affect the lives of others, your kids, your grandkids, other Christians, people at work, non-Christians. The report that we believe and speak has an incredible ripple effect. As followers of Jesus Christ, wrapping things up in your notes, as followers of Jesus Christ, we must daily choose to believe the good report. The issue in life is not the report itself, but the real issue is how will we respond to the report. Because I guarantee you, you're going to get a bad report somewhere. You turn on the TV, you go to work, you go to school, you will see, you will hear a bad report. You can't get away from it. But how will you respond to that report when it comes? Wherever your thoughts go, so goes your life. So go your life. On the back part of your notes, we have several good reports listed there. That's why we gave you an insert, because these, maybe some of you, you need to copy them and put them down in different places in your life. I want to just share with you maybe some reports that you've heard that you've been believing, and you need to counter them with this good report. Some of you have heard, man, you're not special. You're not cared about. You don't matter. But the report from John 1:12 says, as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe on his name. You have the right to be God's child. Some of you, you came in here sick today, and you've heard the report, you're not going to walk out healed. But Isaiah says that by his stripes I am healed. Some of you, you feel all alone, that there's no one with you. But the report of Hebrews 13:5 says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Some of you say, man, I'm going to be broke. But Philippians chapter 4, verse 19 says, my God will supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. Some of you feel, I'm not going to make it. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Some of you say, man, fear and doubt and worry is always going to grip my heart. I'm always going to battle this. I'm not going to overcome this. Isaiah 41:10 says, fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Some of you hear the report, you're a nobody. You're a loser. You're never going to amount to much. But Philippians chapter 1, verse 6 says, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it to the day of Christ. God's still working on you. You're a somebody. You matter. And he's not finished with you yet. He's continuing to grow and develop, and he will do that in you. Some of you hear the report, my life is filled with torment. But Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:7, God's not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and a sound mind. Some of you say it's impossible. I don't see any way out. But with God, nothing is impossible. Luke 1:37. Some of you, I can't overcome temptation. I can't overcome this habit. I can't get past this addiction. But it says, greater is he that is in you than he who is in the world. 1 John 4:4. Some of you feel, man, everyone's out to give me. I don't have a chance. But it says in Romans 8:31, if God is for us, who can be against us? Some of you feel defeated. What's the use? Why try? Why keep going on? Romans 8:37 says, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Some of you say, I can't get past these obstacles I'm facing. But it says in Psalm 18:29, for by you I can run against a troop. By my God, I can leap over a wall. Some of you are struggling with small beginnings. You feel you can't chase the lion. God can't accomplish his dream through you. You've got this dream, but it's never going to happen. Numbers 13:30, our text, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. Whose report will you believe? You have the choice. No one's in your mind. Your parents aren't in your mind. Your pastor's not in your mind. Your teachers aren't in your mind. You decide today the report you will believe. As for me and my house, we're going to choose the Lord. I want God's good report in my life. Heard a story of a peewee football team. And their parents made this paper banner for them to run through, and it says, you know, like Panther Power or something like that. And the kids, they're running out and out in the field, and they run out and they hit the paper banner and they fall down. Can't get into the game. All because of a paper banner. Some of you, there is a paper banner of a bad report that's keeping you out of the game. That's tripping you up, making you fall flat in your face, feeling like, man, I can't do anything. With God, all things are possible. Whose report will you believe?
We hope that you've enjoyed today's message, and thanks again for joining us on the Casper Faith Podcast.